some football!
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Here comes Beckett. Down goes Shaw. The ball is out. Arkansas's got it at the 1 foot line.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
You can actually feel Razorback Stadium shaking underneath our feet right now.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Here's to God in football.
Can't wait. The next game, and the years to come, because victory is going to be habitual.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
The highly anticipated matchup of Duke and Kentucky. I didn't watch. I read stories afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching the returns yesterday. I was actually looking more at the political things, but I'll tell you what. I did watch some highlights, including Zion Williams. Williamson just throwing down dunk after dunk and knocking back these jump shots. And I'm watching the box score just grow and grow. And I start thinking to myself, I know it's way too early to think about this, but you almost, the way that Kentucky gets completely dismantled, and it's supposed to be a national contender, possible champion, they get completely dismantled. I know it's opening day. Do you have an Alabama on your hands in Duke? In a basketball sense, because they just look, I know they're, you know, freshmen, three freshmen to lead the way, and you never know what to expect game after game from freshmen, but maybe you do, if these are the three most talented players in the country. Wow, what a display.
Yeah, four of the top eight recruits, Phil, were on display for not Kentucky and Duke, for Duke last night. So they're close to having a Fab Five on their hands, the throwback to Michigan back in the day. I mean, this team is unbelievable. You mentioned Zion Williamson. The guy, Phil, he only weighs less than one NBA player right now, and that's Bogdanović off the LA Clippers. It's Marjon Bogdanović. But, like, you know what he kind of reminds me of, except he's a lot more athletic, a lot quicker? You remember Sam Perkins, Big Smooth, who played at North Carolina and then played at the Pacers, played at the Supersonics. He has that frame to me. Except he has LeBron James-type athleticism. It's unbelievable. So if he hits a three like he did last night...
Zion Williamson for three. Not just a dunker, folks.
Boy, if he consistently hits that shot, forget it. How do you guard it?
Jay Billis is exactly right. If he can hit threes, and you saw him, Cam Reddish, RJ Barrett last night, this Duke team's not going to lose in the NCAA tournament. And then they have Trey Jones, Tyus Jones' little brother, who's on that 2015 squad that won the championship. This team's incredible. Coach K, he's got himself a little squad this year, Phil.
Well, and it'll be a lot of fun to watch. You look at the box score and see, you know, interesting, they both teams put up the same amount of points both halves, 59 points in the first half, and then Duke puts up 59 in the second half. 118 to 84 over Kentucky. To put that in some perspective, nobody is really worried about Idaho State very much this season. If you even know what their mascot is. But yet, Duke beat Kentucky in the same way that Gonzaga beats Idaho State. And it was a 120-79 final score. So just a little perspective on, you know, maybe you would have picked Duke to win. I don't know what the line was. Maybe you pick him to cover, but nobody would pick a dismantling like that. And it was the worst loss for John Calipari since he took over at Kentucky. So it's been a long time since Coach C was spanked like that.
I want to start with this.
Generational gap.
Okay, so this, you might not understand this, but Coach K is kind of making it cool to play at Duke. And that's a very real thing in recruiting. And that might sound weird for some listening, but you go back to the Christian Laettner days, the Parks, the Reddicks of the world. I mean, these are just a bunch of preppy white kids, and they're hated. Like, they're hated. Like, Duke is easily the most hated team across the board in college basketball. And now you got highlight reel after highlight reel with RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson and company. I mean, Coach K is slowly transforming Duke. It's like they're going to be highlight after highlight, SportsCenter top 10 after. When you think of Duke traditionally, though, Phil, you think of very stuck together, very layup like, very fundamentally sound. And I'm not saying that Coach K won't have these guys fundamentally sound by the end of the year, but they have some role players. But for the most part, this is a star laden team, and they're fun to watch. I can't say that about most Duke teams, especially in the 90s and early 2000s. This is not the same caliber of Duke team that we're used to seeing under Coach K.
And you think that they're cool to watch.
They are cool.
Why wouldn't they be? Why wouldn't they be if you've got a trio that might be the top three picks in the NBA draft this year, and you know that it's the only time you'll ever get to watch the three of them play together for the same season, that sounds like it would be the sort of thing that the cool kids want to get in on.
Here's a stat for you, Phil. So last night, Kentucky scores 84 points. Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, and Cam Reddish, the triplets, if you will.
The triplets, yes. I mean, has anybody coined that yet?
You might as well. I mean,
I was hearing about the 79 Razorbacks, I've never heard anybody else necessarily.
I mean, look at that. It's the top three recruits in college basketball. They got 83 points, Phil. So they were 1 point away of eclipsing or tying what Kentucky had last night. And if you watched it and you watched the highlights, what they did basically is they just each went one-on-one. It was then Reddish's turn. It was then Zion's turn. It was then RJ's turn. It was an unbelievable display of talent last night. And when it's all said and done, now here's the one concern I have about Duke. There's almost too much talent. You have egos that are involved. This happens when you have great teams in sports, talent across the board. Somehow the Warriors have managed to overcome that, which is just incredible to me. But I think Coach K is the guy to kind of halt those egos and bring them to a team-oriented game. Because if that happens, Phil, from what I saw last night, no one's beating this team in college basketball in the NCAA tournament. Not a single one.
Coach K's been doing that for a long time, by the way, too, being able to meld great, talented players into a cohesive force. And, you know, the way that he's helped rebuild Team USA, I mean, USA basketball, that's very much the same thing. That is very much the same thing. So he would be, I mean, he's obviously, you don't need to say anything about the idea that he's the right coach for a certain situation because, you know, Coach K is on the short list, maybe the top college basketball coach of all time. But when you see how he, you know, brings together those egos, like you talk about the professional players on Team USA and get them to play as one and put those egos aside. And I don't know about these three kids that he's got, these three freshmen and their mindset, but you know, if you're worried about the egos, Coach K is the right guy to do it.
And you think about with Team USA, the Redeem Team, and there was a team that fell short of the Olympics. I'm blanking on the year, but the United States should always be the top dog in when it comes to the Olympics. They should always
back to being that.
Yeah, and they're back, and so the fact that he managed to do that, the fact that he's managed to coach all these great players. Jay Williams always talks about the Duke, and it's not the Duke unit, but the Duke brotherhood. That it's a mindset where after college, after the NBA, you're taken care of. You got so many connections and whatnot. And for whatever reason, Coach K is somehow, and it's not for whatever reason, there's a lot of reasons that he's managed to sell these guys on Duke. Because initially, Cal was the recruiter. Cal was the top dog when it came to one and done.
Kentucky was the cool team, right?
Exactly. And Coach K slowly but surely turned Duke into that team. And they got, I mean, Cal's squad just got spanked last night. I mean, they didn't stand a chance in that game the whole second half. And what was interesting, Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, who never criticizes John Calipari, never, ever, 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 is just, when it comes to them, they're just hand in hand, friend to friend, whatever you want to say. He was like, they don't have elite talent. And they don't. I mean, you saw the talent discrepancy last night. They got waxed last night, Phil.
Maybe they have talent, but maybe they don't have talent like Duke, or maybe Duke's got talent like nobody else.
It's kind of like when Arkansas had Bobby Portis and Michael Qualls, and they had a pretty solid team second round in the NCAA tournament. They ended up losing North Carolina. But that Kentucky team, Karl Anthony Towns, first rounder, Devin Booker, franchise player. I mean, that unit compared to Arkansas was, there's a huge talent gap there. And there was a talent gap last night between Kentucky and Duke.
Well, Arkansas gets to travel today to El Paso. Well, I don't think you actually travel to El Paso when you're going to the Army base. You're going right into Fort Bliss. So traveling a day early than usual. And I'm sure they did watch Texas, the team they'll open against, defeat Eastern Illinois. What is it about Eastern Illinois always popping up somehow involving Arkansas athletics? Seeing them in baseball, they're opening up against our first opponent. Football, obviously, one of the two wins this year, 71-59. Texas ends up with that win. Friday night tip-off, excited for the Hogs to get started. I guess they would have played yesterday. It's kind of interesting not to play on the first day of the season. Your opponent did, but obviously there's some big things coming up for the team these next couple of days. And I'm not quite sure exactly what they've got going on in Fort Bliss, but you don't just go there to play basketball. You go there to at least get a look at what the Army base is like. And I think they're staying in the same barracks that the Texas Longhorns are staying in.
No, so are they really?
I remember reading about this.
Wow.
Do you imagine what that would be like if the rivalry meant something to both of these teams? I wonder if they're actually being involved in some of the same activities. It's too bad the fan bases can't get involved in the same manner.
Yeah, exactly. It's always fun. You know, with like bowls, how you have the players compete against one another in different, whether it's athletic events or different video game events. This is not fun-loving, international-friendly.
No.
This is going to be a little fun. And I wish, the only thing is, I think Shaka and Mike Anderson have a pretty good relationship. You wish it was like a Mike Anderson-Cal going head-to-head or two coaches that had disdain for one another. That always adds to a rivalry. That's what I'm hoping. It's not going to happen. But when Tom Herman and Chad Morris, when they get head-to-head, I hope something sparks and they get ticked off of each other, because that'll just add to it in 2021 when they face off. Because when the players hate each other, that's one thing. When the fan base hates each other, that's another. But when the actual coaches of the program have a distinct hatred for one another, oh man, that's just great in sports. You gotta love that.
Well, I think the most famous one for college basketball, as far as I can remember, is John Calipari and former Temple coach, and I can't remember, John Chaney, who, it always just seemed that Chaney's tie was tied way too tight for anybody else, but would get his blood going. But I don't think anybody got his blood going like John Calipari did. He threatened to kill him at a press conference, if Jeez. I remember the words correctly. Yeah. And I think nowadays they're fine with each other, but there was a real threat made.
I forgot about that. That was a while ago. Yeah, Cal's said some things over the years that are interesting. So he's, and it was weird watching that game last night. That's two of the most disliked teams in college basketball. It's like if Ohio State played Alabama or Ohio State played Texas, like, or Notre Dame or something of that nature.
Right. Those are disliked teams because those are that's the level of success that every fan base wants.
But they can't have.
That's right. And I don't say this with any negative connotation towards anybody listening. It's just a fact. You hate them because you're jealous of them. And that's what it comes down to. And then why do you think people hate the Yankees as much as they do?
They hate us because they ain't us, Phil.
Look, you're either going to be, and I've got friends back in Pennsylvania who are Duke fans for some reason. It's like, where did this come from? You root for Penn State when it comes to football season, and obviously this is not a team worth rooting for during basketball season, so you're just going to kind of search around and make your pick and come up with some sort of rationalization for why all of a sudden Duke has become your favorite basketball team.
Did Capel coach at Pitt, or am I making that up?
He's there. This is his first season coaching at Pitt.
Okay, that's what
that's
I thought.
That's right. The tree expands further out for Coach K, although it's the second go-around for Capel as a head coach because of his time previously at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm watching Duke last night, and you got John Shire, Nolan Smith sitting next to him. I'm just thinking, man, Duke's had some hated players over the years. I mean, you go back, and that's if you haven't seen the I Hate Christian Laettner 30 for 30, you need to watch it, because it's just a chronological, it's a great great viewing of just kind of the Duke hatred over the years. But again, I'll address it again. Coach K is slowly but surely making Duke cool. And we can kind of pull this back into what Chad Morris is doing for Arkansas. Luckily, Chad Morris has a son that's in high school that can kind of keep him up of what's hip, what's cool. So he doesn't have to worry about
generational gap.
I mean, that's why I work with you.
Exactly.
You're doing the exact same thing for me, although I think Coach Morris has a few years on me, and my son is nowhere, he's six. So, he can tell me what's cool for a 6-year-old as far as whatever YouTube kids to get in on. But, I think I'm a little envious that Coach Morris would have somebody who is, if you're in high school and you're playing football and you're the quarterback, you're going to be cool. You can let Dad in on everything that he's not in on.
I feed you useless information that you really don't need, and you feed me information that I actually need on a daily basis, stuff that will actually be relevant for me in 20 years. So
I don't know if I'm filling you up on anything other than just a bunch of crap daily here, 12 through 2. And all the listeners now are nodding their heads saying that's exactly what you're filling them up on.
Speaking of crap, happen. What about Tim Tebow possibly playing for the Mets in 2019? I think your blood's going to get boiling if we start this conversation.
No, it's that's not going to get my blood boiling. I mean, would it be good for baseball or bad for baseball? It's neither or. It's just another player coming up that's getting a chance at the age of 30 to be a rookie in Major League Baseball. You apparently have some Stephen A. Smith audio about Tim Tebow talking baseball.
Oh, yeah.
He did a 6-6 in the 60. Look at his speed. Running from home plate to second base. Bryce Harper couldn't do that. Derek Jeter couldn't do that. They had the blasphemy, the unmitigated gall. The insulting. I can't believe that somebody actually mentioned Derek Jeter and Bryce Harper's name in the same breath as Tim Tebow. Do you have any idea how insulting that is? Derek Jeter.
So Stephen A. has moved on from he can't throw to mocking him for his baseball. And I'll say this, like, I want Tim Tebow to succeed. I've met him. He's a nice guy. He's gotten some flack for his religious beliefs over the years, and he wasn't the best NFL caliber quarterback, but I want him to succeed. I think that's a great story. The fact that, well, hey, I want to play baseball. I want to see what I got. And he's given a chance that not many other athletes, because of his popularity and whatnot, are given, similar to what Michael Jordan was given back in the day with Birmingham Barons. Godspeed to him, man. I hope he succeeds, Phil.
I hope it happens soon. I have no problem with Tim Tebow one way or the other. He seems like a great guy. He's had great achievements and gives back to the community in many ways. He's actually pretty good on television. But it's, you know, I just don't see him as a major leaguer.
Be here this weekend.
I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
But if he makes it, good for me. I mean, if you're going to play minor league baseball, then you have to put your ego aside. You want to talk about the idea of putting egos aside. Being a minor league baseball player will suck the ego out of you. It really will. You know, I think playing minor league sports of any kind, you know, where there is no glory and it's all about scratching and clawing to getting to the top level of that sport. But Tebow's, I mean, at the age of 30, I know he was injured for a chunk of last season. I can't remember what his injury was, but I mean, he hit 273, great, but 6 home runs and 103 strikeouts, almost 300 plate appearances. I remember watching some of his swings. They, you know, they put him up every once in a while, and you can follow the games on MILB.com too. So I've seen him swing a little bit. He's tight. He's you know, I'm sure he's not quite as bulky as he might have been as a football player, but he just looks a little tight up there. And I think he's the kind of batter that you could jam him pretty good with a good fastball inside. So I think major league pitchers would eat him up. I don't think he'd have much of a chance.
Speaking of egos, what about Bryce Harper reportedly turning down a 10-year, $300 million contract in September? I know you want to get your thoughts in on this.
Well, it's just, well, I mean, why not? You know, I mean, you're going into free agency for a reason, and that's to see exactly how much you can get. He's one of the guys, along with, you know, Manny Machado and a few other pitchers that don't have to worry about whether the owners are going to come after you or whether they're going to just kind of let you sit there and simmer for a while. You know, and keep in mind that his agent is Scott Boras, who you don't sign during your last season as a Scott Boras client.
Is that like
nor are you one of the first to sign, you know, over the first month of free agency. You know, that'll kind of set the market, what Harper gets, and what Machado gets is based off of that in some way. But I mean, it's just a big number to look at, to say $30 million a year. No thanks. I'll take my chances. And his chances are actually good to get something more than that.
What about our next contract negotiations with Tommy? You think we can get him to represent us? Well, he'll probably represent you. He won't represent me.
Scott Boras?
Yeah.
Well, down in this part of the country, we need Jimmy Sexton to represent us.
Okay.
Right?
Sexton's like Southern, and then he's up top.
Right. And, okay. And you know, we do talk more football than baseball. So, I mean, in that case, and more college sports, too, because that's the route that Sexton goes. If you're going to be, you know, talking about the SEC as much as we do, and you want to maximize your talent through the biggest contract you can get, Jimmy Sexton is your man. Otherwise, you know, if you're going the baseball route, if I'm moving to the Northeast, if I'm heading up towards Pittsburgh, if I'm heading up towards Boston, and I'm going to live up there and do a talk show, yes, maybe Scott Boras would be my guy. By the way, Arkansas connection for Scott Boras, because he did play baseball professionally. He was a minor league baseball player, and he played for the Arkansas Travelers. I think I've seen a photo of him at the old ballpark there. He was, if I can't remember what position, I want to say he was an infielder, but sure enough, he was a real professional baseball player before he, you know, kind of took the money in the game and blew it up to a place that's never been before or since.
Speaking of Arkansas, one last thing real quick. Casinos are coming in the natural state approximately.
But this isn't, it's not sports gambling,
which is what we want. And by the way, we haven't mentioned this yet. Arkansas is a 14-point dog. That's what they opened as in this game. It's transitioned a little bit. I think it's gone a few more points LSU's way. But yeah, 54% of Arkansans voted to get casinos. But all we care about is sports gambling, right, Phil?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been known every once in a while, not in this state, not yet at least, to try my hand at blackjack. And have had more wins than losses throughout lifetime.
Now that I've
announced it on our radio network, I'm sure all the losses will start. So I should never step foot in a casino again.
I can't say the same. I've had a lot more losses than I've had wins. So I try to stay away from actual casinos when it comes to gambling. And even though I enjoy it, I just try to stay away from a little less.
Here's the string of luck that I've had. All right, the biggest win I ever had was a $1,000 hand on a video poker machine in the Sierra Madres in California.
Jeez.
Right.
How about that?
A Native American gaming casino, and played a five-quarter hand, hit a royal flush. This was one of the places that didn't serve any alcohol. It was all smoothies. And win $1,100 on this one machine, 1,000 of them on that one hand. Yeah, pretty ridiculous. So lucky, thanks to that, I pretty much can make some bad decisions for a couple of months if I was going to hit the casinos again.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
And it's Joe Adams with a hurdle. Great speed. Adams down the sideline. He's gone. 92 yards for a touchdown.
Change my mind.
I changed my mind. Hi, Joey.
Hey, how you doing?
He won't sell anybody out to buy his future.
How can you be so obtuse?
What did you call me?
Obtuse. Is it deliberate?
Son, you're forgetting yourself.
Change my mind.
You know, it's okay to not have your mind changed by any of this stuff either. You and I've had pretty forceful arguments to get the other to say, you know what, you might actually be right about this, which I guess it says that we're more respectful towards each other than we really should be.
Yeah, I think with us kind of going back and forth, it can be fun, it can be serious, but most of the time when it comes down to it, I should be listening to what you have to say as the elder of this group and of this operation. So most of the time I should be kind of falling in line, if you will, when it comes to what you have to say, Phil.
Okay, so I'll start with a topic that I got into a Twitter conversation with some baseball fans yesterday, and I should credit the guy who actually brought it up first. Was it respect the wood? I got to go back in my mentions and double check to see.
This is a good thread, by the way. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you need to go on Phil's Twitter and see it.
It was a good thread because we're talking about the thought of who would win. And the question was, would the 2018 Northwest Arkansas Naturals defeat the 2018 Arkansas Razorbacks? In baseball, obviously. We're not talking about any other sport. We're talking the Naturals, of course. This was from Respect the Wood, who's on Twitter at JRJ850. He's been tweeting at us for quite a bit. We got a couple others involved in it. So there's some questions as to how do you decide whether one team would beat another? Because I think that the Razorbacks could defeat the Naturals if you just play in one game. Anything can happen in one game of baseball, but that's why you got to have series. So are you playing best of three, playing best of five? If you're going best of three, I think sometimes that we're a little overdone with the thought of any college team can beat a major league team. You know, you'll joke about that with football every once in a while, that Alabama is essentially an NFL team, that they could beat this year's Browns. I don't think it would be very close at all. I think the Browns would beat Alabama, and it would be pretty ugly. Those are men, and they are, it's a more refined game. That's one of the things about the conversation we had yesterday with Barstool Riggs about what is he like more, the NBA game or the college game? And he's talking a little bit about the thought that the NBA game is more refined. Minor league baseball is also more refined than college baseball. They've been around longer. There's more depth of pitching. You're going to play with wooden bats, and that might have a little bit to do with it. Plus, it's a different game. It's a way much of a different game. You're talking about the college game baseball. It's all American kids. In professional baseball, you've got all sorts of different nationalities playing, and it's a different style. So you're dealing with Dominicans who play, that's really the direction the game's gone in so many ways now. I'm looking at the Naturals probably winning in a series. Now, not to say that Arkansas couldn't win 2 out of 3 from the Naturals. I don't think that they'd be able to pull off a 3 of 5. No college team is built to play in a 5-game series. So that's why I would say if you're playing best of 3, it could happen. I'd still lean towards the pro team. No matter how good Arkansas was last year, there is still some refinement to be made. Now, last year's Arkansas team was probably as close to a professional team as you'll ever see, at least for the Razorbacks. So it would be a lot of fun to watch, but I would take the pro team, so change my mind.
What about B9 on a 1-game series for whoever the Naturals pull out? Blaine Knight, you taking him? Are you taking the Naturals?
I don't even know who the Naturals would put up there, honestly. But what I do know is, I wasn't going to mention any names or any statistics or anything like that. You know, I mean, Blaine was 14-0, and they lost 1 game that he pitched in all season long. But that's against college-level competition. It's not against professional-level competition right then and there. So I think that Blaine probably would pitch well. Not to say that they wouldn't win that game, but there's a much better chance for a double-A team to beat him than I think we saw from some of the college teams last year.
I just think it's very hard to argue that a college-level team would be able to beat. Now, there every once in a while, you'll see a team with superior talent, no matter the sport, find a way to lose a game. But I'm kind of with you, Phil. Over time, that's why 7-game series, for the most part, they show who the better team is. Like,
it's just a different game,
exactly.
Really. I mean, because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, college... In college, there's just not that level of depth that there is on a lot of double-A rosters. And look, sometimes a college baseball game is at the level of a double-A game. It depends on who's pitching, and it depends on how much depth there is on those teams as far as pitching is concerned. And it's also rare. I find it rare where you can point to guys like Andrew Benintendi gets up to the big leagues and basically a full season of pro ball. And guys like Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman, those are outliers. Those are outliers. That doesn't happen very often. And so everybody else that's on that team is not quite at that level. So to me, it's an interesting debate to have. I lean towards the pro game. All right, what's your first?
All right, first one is style of play doesn't trump winning, Phil. I got an argument with a buddy a few years back that he didn't think Tony Bennett would be successful here because Tony Bennett's offense at Virginia, and if you don't know who that is, he's the head basketball coach at Virginia.
His offense is basically defense, right?
Exactly. He's very defensive-oriented, defensive-minded coach. Guy has won 3 regular season championships in the ACC, conference tournament champion twice, NCAA tournament 5 straight years. This guy just wins, and I know Virginia goes out typically before they should in the NCAA tournament, but I'm of the belief that, go back to LSU under Les Miles, especially in 2011, it wasn't pretty how they played, but that team was, I thought was fun to watch, and they won games. No one was complaining about Les Miles from the LSU camp in 2011, about, oh, this offense isn't that great. Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson, they're not that fun to watch. Now, you may have the thought, oh, this team might stumble because of their offense, but no one was complaining about the fact that, oh, this, they were winning, Phil. Winning trumps everything. That's why Urban Meyer is still the coach at Ohio State. It just does. That's why we need to get so good at our jobs where no matter what we say, Tommy can't fire us, even though he'll probably fire you before me. So, winning trumps everything, Phil. It just does. So, especially style play. Like, give me a break. Get off my lawn. No, not get off my lawn. Change my mind. Winning goes above style of play.
I could just play something. If I was just recording the show, I could play a quote from you from earlier on in the first hour describing of how dorky Duke is because they They just won.
They won.
But with a bunch of players that you didn't really enjoy watching because they were, I think to use your term, slow and white.
Well, it was, okay, go back. When
so they didn't have that style, but they kept winning, but you hated them anyway because you're jealous.
Mean, go back to like UNLV, like they were Larry Johnson and that squad. That was fun to watch. Fab Five, Chris Webber. I mean, that was the two contrasting styles between them and Duke. Yes, Duke wasn't that fun to watch, but they won. Why Duke fans love Duke, because Coach K, they're a little flashier now with these high-flying recruits, but he's used to winning for the most part of the majority of his career with kind of low, not low talent, but low, not really flashy players. They did things the fundamental. Now he's got, we'll see what happens. So they win championships this way because he really still, he had Okafor and Tyus Jones and that squad in 2015, but he really hasn't come up with as many championships he probably should have with this new one and done thing. So winning just trumps everything, Phil, to me.
Winning might trump everything, but what about winning in March instead of being the first top seed to lose to a number 16 seed by 20 points, no less? So, I mean, winning might trump everything, but losing in the first round as a number one seed ain't going to trump anything.
That's
not stylish, and that's the best way to put it. That's never going to be stylish.
Yeah, Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and a couple other players on Virginia. I was looking at them like, what are y'all doing? Is it UMBC? Was that the team? The Terriers.
The Terriers.
The best Twitter account. If you have a Twitter, for those out here who have social media, if you have Twitter, follow that U Athletics account. It was that in the month of March, they were just that Twitter account was awesome. So, but yeah,
didn't that guy get a job though? I mean, he got a different job. Mm-hmm. I think because that's the idea of being prepared for the moment of your life that you didn't realize was about to happen, and then boom, on you go to better and bigger things. I guess that's the guy that should take over the Wendy's Twitter feed at some point.
Exactly. You're just doing this till you get the Pirates gig, right? I mean,
it's what I've been telling myself for the last 18 years.
You're holding steadfast.
At some point, you just have to say, maybe this is it. Maybe this is it.
Maybe it's just this.
This is it. I mean, I'm on the downslope of my life, like I've been saying for the last year or so.
Yeah,
change my mind. Change my mind. At the age of 41, you're on the downslope of life. Go ahead.
I told you that I can't change your mind on that because you've said you peaked. So I'm not going to argue with you that you peaked because I don't have any like solid evidence that says you haven't peaked. So I can't argue.
This is it for me. I mean, this is the highlight of my life. You know, doing a talk show with you and doing Arkansas Athletics.
God, you've had a bad
living in the Rock. I'm happy with that.
If this is the highlight, doing a show with me, that's a terrible life. Man.
You know what else is a highlight? And I found this recently. We all love a good grilled cheese sandwich, right? The best grilled cheese, Ty. And look, we're on this. It's cheap food. It's easy to make. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money on it. But I was a little tweaked by the thought of this, but it actually works. It's better. This is the best grilled cheese sandwich. Mayonnaise on the outside and then using mayonnaise instead of butter. That's the best grilled cheese. Mayonnaise makes a better grilled cheese sandwich than butter. Change my mind.
I'm not going to change your mind because I actually worked at Five Guys for a little bit when I was in high school, and we did that. And it was incredible.
Was that a secret? Were you not supposed to tell anybody while you were working there?
Isn't there like statute of limitations or something? Like, I think I'm good.
I guess so. I think you're okay.
I think we did it like individually or whatever. It was good. So
I couldn't change your mind on that. I was right.
No, you're right. You're 100%
100%
right.
Completely correct.
I have nothing to refute what you just said at
good
all.
For me.
But speaking of food, the lady, and I'm not even going to mention her name because of the audacity of what she did. She dipped her chicken strips in soda again, Phil.
So I saw this at the U.S. Open, right?
Mm-hmm. For tennis.
This was replayed over and over again. Her son's sitting right there with her. She's dipping the chicken strip in a Coke and then eating it. And you could see the joy on her face as she ate it. She's back. She's doing this again on TV.
She did it at a Knicks Bulls game in MSG. I don't understand it. And let me preface this. I eat some weird food. I have some interesting combinations where people look at me a little strange. And so I don't know if I'm the person to be ripping someone for doing this. But chicken strips and soda, like, that is just, that's an atrocity to me, Phil. Is it not? I mean, change my mind. Chicken strips and soda is a terrible idea. Change my mind.
Well, it's not really that different than just dipping it in honey, because it depends on the soda that
Phil,
you're dipping it in. It is. It just depends on the soda. So you got to have the perfect sweetness to it. So a root beer won't work. Dipping it in Sprite, that's, you know, lemon lime doesn't work with the with chicken in that way. It would have to be a Coke. It would have to be that kind of super sweetness. I think it could work. It's just the wetness of it. I mean, that's the problem I have with it, because I want my chicken fingers and chicken strips to be nice and crispy. And if you dip it in something wet like that, that doesn't have the gooey consistency of a ketchup or a barbecue sauce or honey, then I could see where it might be a little weird. People don't like wet food. But I can see how the taste. You know what you need to do? Try dipping your chicken strip, Ty, just in soda concentrate, just in the Coke concentrate before it gets into the fizzy water. Now I think you might have a taste that's worth trying.
I would disagree with you there. So I cannot stand with you on that statement, Phil.
All right, you go with your third.
All right, so we're entering this new era of basketball. It's pace and space is what many have dubbed it as. And if you watch the Warriors, they really do shoot a lot of threes, don't really take back to the basket. Those fundamentals have really gone out the door. What Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, I could go on and on with the oldies that have really established that part of our game. And I say our game as a guy that just played JV in basketball in high school. But I think pace and space is going to take over. I don't know if we'll ever go back to the theory of turning her back to the basket. Now, every once in a while, you have a post up, but you're going to see for the majority. And Villanova's a perfect example of it last year. I mean, they're taking 30 plus threes a game with Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, Dante DiVincenzo, and the rest of that group. Arkansas, go back to Arkansas's big wins at Bud Walton. Pace and space, shooting a bunch of threes and drilling them for distance. Like, this is when you go back to Arkansas upsets at Bud Walton, I think, and I'm just throwing this out there, I think every single one of them, someone hit a three to start the game, and then they just go on this barrage of threes. Like Ole Miss back when Marshall Henderson was in town, they just hit an unbelievable amount of threes on senior day. It's what is trending in college and NBA right now, and I think it's going to be here to stay, Phil. Changed my mind.
Well, I could see. I think sports go in cycles, you know, because for every 10-year period where in baseball home runs are down, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, home runs go up and strikeouts go down. So, you know, this sort of stuff can be cyclical. And what I see in basketball, you're correct. I mean, there are no more true post-up players, none that I can think of. And it's because of a different brand of athlete now. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain could play in today's game. He could. Bill Russell could play in today's game. So could Kareem. Those are extreme cases. Anybody whose style back then was post-up, I could not see getting in the game right now. But sooner or later, things change in sports, and things that you might not have anticipated. Like, who could have anticipated the devaluation of the running back in the NFL? I would have never thought that would be the case.
James Conner, man.
And that's happened. Well, Conner's having a great season, but part of that is also because of his ability to catch. If you're going to be a running back in the NFL, you better be able to catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
It's not just toting the rock 30 times anymore. That sort of running back is rare. Part of that is also because the brand of athlete in the NFL is better, bigger, faster, stronger. And that's the same in basketball. So there's two ways to look at it. You know, the athletes are never going to get worse. There's always human beings. The nature is to always get bigger, badder, faster, stronger. But the nature of these sports have always been cyclical, that things that go out of style eventually come back in style. So I could look at it both ways, but I'm trying to change your mind. So I'm saying things go in cycles in sports, just like in politics too. Just the nature of it, I think you will eventually have some post-up scoring back.
And I don't know
when or who or where, but it'll be back.
And I'll help you change my own mind. The fact that they might be moving the three-point line back in college and NBA, that's going to help kind of transition that if it happens. But for now, pace and space is the move for college and NBA teams.
And it's fun to watch, so you're not going to complain about it, right?
Exactly.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Trying to extend the play, and Brooks Ellis, pick six, will it be? Yes! How about that?
Bill King from Nashville Sports Radio joining us right now. Bill, how's it going today?
Hey, guys. Doing good. Thank you.
Outstanding. So I guess things are as we expected now, that the divisions have been decided and the SEC still have 3 weeks left in this regular season, but we know what we're looking at in Atlanta. No surprises, I guess, over the weekend, except maybe why you would have expected LSU might have put up a point or three or seven. Nothing. Did you expect that kind of domination from Alabama?
I'm not surprised. I don't know that I would have said 29-0, but I didn't know where the points would come from for LSU. So I don't know that I would have picked zero for them, but it's not surprising. They don't have a lot offensively, particularly in a game like that now. They just don't have enough to give. The Georgia-Kentucky game went exactly like I thought. Those two teams are significantly better in just players and numbers than the rest of their division, West, East, et cetera. Sometimes it doesn't end up that way, as we know, but if this is based on personnel, and I think Kirby Smart's proven he's a pretty good coach and he's got a really good staff, I think what we're looking at is what it ought to be.
Let me ask you about we know it's Alabama and everybody else. And in the East, Georgia certainly looks like they've separated themselves. Is there anything in that you see in Georgia that could defeat Alabama? I know they got a few games left, but that looks like the one shot for Alabama to not have an undefeated regular season. And still, it looks like it's almost impossible right now.
I think Georgia matches up with Alabama as well as anybody in America. Now, that doesn't mean they beat them, but I think they have players. They're a very young roster, youngest in the league. So a lot of the development is not there yet, and they're still better. They're still a top five type team, top five, top six. So I don't think Georgia in the SEC championship game, particularly since you're going against Tua, I don't think this is their time yet. I think they're going to have a roster that's going to be toe-to-toe and mature with Alabama in the future. But I don't think age-wise, their peak was last year, at least for the moment, when you had Raquan Smith and Lorenzo Carter on the defense, and you had Chubb and Michelle. A lot of maturity there. So this team is kind of maturing, growing in front of us. I don't think they beat Alabama. No.
Bill Keane's our guest, morning host at Nashville Sports Radio in Nashville, Tennessee. Bill, Tua right now is -1,000 on Bovada to win the Heisman. I know he hasn't won it yet, but who has the best chance to dethrone him for that trophy?
Based on this past weekend, Will Greer, maybe. I mean, that was an incredible game. That was the throw of the year on that final touchdown. And then, of course, he had to score two twice to win it, because the first one, there was a timeout right before he completed that pass to David Sills. So he would be in there. I think people have cooled a little bit on Dwayne Haskins. And I would probably go up and say Kyler Murray. Those three, I'm talking about the two other than Tua, probably. And I haven't looked. I'm through the years, and I've had a vote. Frankly, the Heisman's gotten boring to me. It just has. But to me, those would be the three. I'm probably leaving somebody big out. But that's the way I would look at it.
When did you start feeling this way about the Heisman? Because I've, you know, in all honesty, and we talk so much college football, but it's an award that I started to lose interest in a while back. What was it about the Heisman that you think is boring, and when did you start feeling that way?
You know, there wasn't a moment. Like, there wasn't one year where somebody won and I was so disgusted, or I disagreed so much. I just became bored with it. I don't think, other than revealing my vote, I never spend a second on my show through the years having an extended Heisman conversation. You know, somebody might call an ass like you did, but it's never a thing on the show. I bet we don't spend 10 total minutes an entire calendar year on that topic. And I won't watch. The Heisman presentation is awful. I will not watch that TV show. I might check the very end to acknowledge the obvious, which it's always obvious who's going to win it, right? I may do that. But sit through all that? God almighty. You're talking about torturing me. It's the worst thing you could do to me on that Saturday night is sit down and make me watch that Heisman ceremony. God.
All right, so let's go back to that Texas-West Virginia game. Will Greer and company. Daniel Holgerson's like, oh, we're going for it, and they get it behind Will Greer, who is a Heisman contender, like you said. Still's got an unsportsmanlike conduct earlier in the game for doing the horns down. And we asked one of our guests yesterday, Nikki Chavanel, who covers Razorback recruiting for Rivals, what's the most annoying fan base in college football? And we asked her, is Texas it? Bill, you get a bunch of different fans on your show on a daily basis. You interact with fans all the time. From your experience, who's the most annoying fan base in college football?
Boy. I don't really. My mind is just set so different, I think. I don't really have one of those. Now you'll go through spurts, maybe, with a team here or there, but I don't really have one because I'm really not emotionally invested with anybody. Let me think about that. I don't know. I think they all now each fan base is bigger or smaller than the other one, right? Each has their pocket of sycophants, reasonable people, all the different categories you've got in fan base, passionate college football fan bases. But I don't know if there's one that I'll give you one I experienced, but I'm going to give it to you both ways. During the 90s, when it was Tennessee, Florida every year, in the SEC pretty much after 92, and nationally some of those years, those fan bases were at war, literally. And there was more hate there than I ever experienced in anything, including Alabama, Auburn, including Michigan, Ohio State, any of them. I mean, it got every time one would go visit the other, meaning you had to play there. I would get call after call. I could just do that show about how bad they were treated. So that might not be the most dumb or out of control fan bases, but I'll tell you, those two hated each other passionately, and we were located Nashville, obviously, so that before we did more of a national thing, that controlled a lot of the show.
Bill Keene's our guest. He's a college football expert. You can follow him on Twitter at Bill is Keen. Bill, a little less of a heightened rivalry, LSU and Arkansas. It's a rivalry which had some great games over the years. Just going back and since 92, since they joined the SEC, Arkansas did. What's been your favorite LSU-Arkansas game that you remember watching?
Tell you what, Bobby P. had some pretty good games against them, if I recall. I don't know through the years if one stood out, because we've always kind of tried to figure out on our show since 92 who was their most natural rival in the SEC. And that might be it, but there's not one that clearly stands out to me. Now, I'm not there every day. There's probably use inside that state. But I don't know that there's one in particular. I tell you about this one, guys. If Arkansas was good enough, this is a good spot for Arkansas to be playing LSU in. Arkansas just doesn't have the personnel to do it. It's a really good spot to be playing in right now. I like where A&M gets them at the end of the schedule, too, actually. I think there's an opportunity there for the Aggies at home to get LSU.
Bill, let me ask you about one of the two Big 12 teams that are so exciting, because I want to see either Oklahoma or West Virginia in the playoff. I mean, there's many points that they put up. And the game of the year may be, the last game they play this season, in the regular season, on the 23rd. It'll be in Norman. Which of those two teams do you see at the top of the Big 12 when it's all said and done? Hopefully they're in the playoff.
Right. They're going to play twice, the way it's looking, back-to-back. Back-to-back weeks, which is kind of awkward. But I would say Oklahoma, because I'm going to take Oklahoma's offense. As much as I love Will Greer and what Dana's done with that offense and David Sills and the other personnel they have, Oklahoma, to me, with Kyler Murray, the two elite receivers that cannot be handled in space at all for them, they have a solid running back. That kid, by the way, is from Marietta. Really good running back. They've got a very good offensive line. I'm going to say that unit, because they're still not very defensively. I think that unit carries them through. Now, I don't know if they get in the playoffs, but I think that will trump West Virginia.
Bill, let's look at, before we let you go, the Mississippi State, Alabama, because, you know, it almost feels like a replay of last week with LSU. You got a team that struggles to score, but they have a great defense. I mean, look at State's rankings defensively, sixth in total defense, second in scoring defense. They're one of the best teams in the country against the pass. Does any of that matter at all on Saturday?
Not as far as the outcome, but I spent quite a bit of time this week, and we did some this morning. This is a potential flat spot. If you think about it, Alabama has not had a flat spot. They have opened up every game, except now the LSU game, scoring a touchdown on their first drive. They've, in every game, had their opponent done at halftime, basically. I mean, I didn't give LSU a chance because you could tell they couldn't move the ball or score. You could tell they couldn't score. So this could be a flat spot after the emotion of going into Baton Rouge on a Saturday night. It's not enough for Mississippi State to win because I don't know where Mississippi State's points are coming from. You got a one-dimensional quarterback. That's not going to work. You don't beat Alabama that way. And even though Mississippi State has some absolute dudes on defense, NFL dudes, defensive line, linebacker, et cetera, it's not going to be enough. Now, it might be flat a little bit, but Alabama probably went a game 31, maybe a little bit more than that, to 10 or 38 to 10, something like that. I don't see Mississippi State getting much on the scoreboard, even if Alabama hits a flat spot. I just can't square it up in my mind.
Bill, let me top off the interview with this. It's National Eating Healthy Day, but you, Phil, and I, we don't do that. We eat what we want to eat.
Not much.
So your death row meal, Phil. If you're, I know you're on your deathbed. You're going to be watching some college football game. What are you going to be eating while you're watching that game?
You know what? I eat so much. Well, we really don't. I just expose it publicly every time we do cook something. But I would say a huge plate of sushi. I want sashimi. I want soy sauce. I want some. Do I get a drink? Get me some sake to go with it. That's how I'm going down. I'm going down. And the goal there is to do so much of that I die before they send me to the electric chair.
You know, that's mostly health food there. I think you're looking for the mercury poisoning. It sounds like you're going for mercury poisoning.
Not Natty Light or Dickel, Bill?
Well, no, because that's going to take a while, right? Sake's going to get right to it. Nice, warm sake.
I want to have a meal with Bill. There's no doubt. The way you talk about grilling, and now we're talking sashimi, I got to have a meal with you when you come to Nashville. Just sign it up. Bill, great stuff.
Hey,
always
fun. You guys are probably busy, but you're invited to our big party on the 19th at the Omni. If you can get in, come on in. We'd love to have you.
All right. Appreciate that invite, and we'll be back with you next week. Appreciate your time.
Okay. See you guys.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.